Welcome to another edition of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. So glad you are back with us this week. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, and joined once again by my co-host, Eric Edholm. Eric, what's going on? I'm hopeful that we are better talking football than we are operating Skype. As long as that's the case, our listeners should be okay here.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely behind the curve, I would say, technologically speaking, but I guarantee this was not my mistake. I tried and tried my best, so for our listeners, I hope the quality is good enough for you guys and that the content is really what shines.
There you go, and we are going to keep working on this Skype connection. We were able to figure it out last week for whatever reason this week. We are using the cell phone, but Eric sounds pretty clear to me, so we'll just jump right in. Again, we are editors at Pro Football Weekly, and we hope you're checking out all the work at ProFootballWeekly.com. Eric is crushing it on the way we hear it. He's only been here a few weeks, and he's just knocking stuff out left and right, so make sure you're checking that out. And we've got some other stuff in store for you today, though. Eric, just randomly, I kind of thought we'd start with the Raiders because they're sort of always in the conversation and, a breakthrough season last year. But I wonder, is there a chance that maybe we are anointing them too quickly? Did they find some defensive fixes this offseason that I seem to have missed?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, going defense heavy in the draft was probably a wise decision. But, you know, some of the choices, it's worked out where the injuries to Gerrion Conley, and obviously he had a legal situation they had to figure out. That seems to be in the past. But their top two picks, two defensive backs, Obi Melifonwu in the second round, Gerrion Conley in the first round. You know, they've been slow to return to practice. Shin splints maybe, although Conley's kind of sort of denied it a little bit,
but right.
Yeah, and it'll be in round two, I mean, a phenomenal athlete, but he's had an ankle that's held him back a little bit, and you know, it's getting to the point where, you know, we start looking at a pretty diverse Titans offense in just about 2 weeks from now. They may have their hands full in week one, and then three of the first four games I believe are on the road. It's tough sledding early on, and like last year, they were giving up just tracks of yards and really had a tough first month before they got on track defensively.
Yeah, and obviously they were able to overcome some stuff. I think they gave up 30-something points in New Orleans, but of course the late fourth-quarter magic started right away for them. But that's not the way they want to live on a weekly basis, of course. So it's a great point by you starting with the Titans, who maybe we'll get to in this episode or not, but I know obviously one of the sexy picks to break through this season. And it is a tough road slate early for them, so will be interesting. The good news for Oakland, Eric, and I think it was somehow a little bit under the radar, but Donald Penn's holdout did end this week, and I don't know how it flew under the radar, but Marshall Newhouse was protecting new franchise quarterback's blindside.
Right.
And, January didn't feel that long ago when Penn was out in Carr. Well, I guess by then, it was Connor Cook in the playoffs who never had a chance. But great news for them to get their left tackle back. And you have to think whether it's an under-the-table deal, a wink-wink agreement. He's probably going to get a little bit of raise now that he has showed up, don't you think?
Yeah, that could be the case. And certainly it helps when your backup is, you know, there is such a drop-off there. And then if you're going to invest in your quarterback, you know, you're going to bolster the offense on the whole with guys like Marshawn Lynch, and you're going to gear up for a Super Bowl run, you got to have a left tackle, and you got to have a guy that you depend on up front. The line is you know, kind of considered this unit that's maybe one of the two or three best at that position in the NFL. And so, yeah, you've got to have all hands on deck, and depth may be a little bit of an issue, and he certainly has played pretty well. I was a little surprised, to be honest, how well he's played the last few years, but yeah, he's back, and that's huge to get that chemistry down up front and get ready for a couple of tough opening assignments.
Yeah, that's a good call by you. He has been a little bit of a late bloomer, always really durable, but I don't think was ever – I know he didn't get Pro Bowl recognition until, I guess it was last season, two seasons ago for the first time. So a good point by you. Inside, Eric, they're going to be just nasty again, or should be, with Osemele and Hudson and Jackson, of course, and nice to not have to worry about messing with that now, at least initially with Penn back in. So last thing on the Raiders for you, what do you think about Derek Carr? He's coming off the injury and had such a huge season, played an MVP caliber level most of the way. How does he avoid a drop-off? Is that something you worry about, or is there an area of his game that you think needs to improve for him to avoid that this season?
Yeah, I mean, just talking to people around him, he's always been a really focused kid and a really grounded guy, and you know, not the type, so I think, to to get big headed after a deal, or, you know, to self anoint him, you know, the next star or anything like that. I mean, I think he knows there's a lot of pressure, just like there was on his older brother. You know, once you get the money, you got to perform. And he saw how David sort of struggled to meet those expectations. And you know, I know David pretty well. And he's always said it just, Derek always impresses him with how sort of even keeled he is. And I think, you know, you just see it in a lot of aspects. But as far as the football goes, I mean, they need to push the ball down the field a little bit more consistently. I mean, the yards per catch were pretty low last year. And, you know, having Lynch helps. Obviously, that additional threat in the backfield, you can kind of open things up. You know, I'd like to see Amari Cooper take that next step and be that consistent weapon. He's been pretty good, but I'd like to see him be more of a touchdown producer and more of a big play guy on a week-to-week basis. You know, does Crabtree have much left? What are the other options in the passing game? So, yeah, I mean, this is still a good football team. Do I think we're, you know, last year there was a lot of smoke and mirrors. There were some wins that were very, you know, fortunate that they got. I don't think they're going to win as many games this season, but they could be a more dangerous team if they're sort of geared up properly for December and beyond.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, too. And, you know, it's interesting, as a fantasy football enthusiast, I think one of the great upsets of last season, and it's been 2 years now in a row, that Michael Crabtree's actually outperformed Amari Cooper. I just didn't think that that could happen 2 years in a row, and I think it's both a testament to Crabtree and just a statement that maybe Cooper needs to find the end zone a little bit more, be a little bit more consistent. But certainly I don't think there's any reason to worry there. We should probably see his best this year. You mentioned Marshawn Lynch. They bring on Cordarrelle Patterson and Jared Cook as well. I don't have a lot of concerns about that offense, but again, I don't know who's playing linebacker for this team. I don't know what goes on at corner with Sean Smith's issues, and then with you know, Gary Conley's slow start as well. So we will continue to monitor that. I didn't mean to have this as a segue, Eric, but I think it works. Reggie McKenzie makes Derek Carr his franchise guy, gives him the huge deal. In Minnesota, Rick Spielman is going about it the other way. He has handed out nearly $100 million guaranteed in extensions for three core defenders, Linval Joseph, Everson Griffin, and of course, Xavier Rhodes over the past month. You actually had a chance to chat with Rick, early this week, late last week. And I have to ask you, what do you think ends up happening? First of all, did Spielman kind of have the cart in front of the horse a little bit as he's going about it in the different direction with both Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater coming into contract years? What do you think happens at quarterback? And it's kind of unique to see them take care of the defense first, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of those were done for you know, one, for bookkeeping reasons, to kind of help manage the cap, not only this year, 2018, but also 2019, is how Rick explained it to me. And they have a slew of free agents coming up. I mean, that's the result of drafting well and developing some of these players. And, you know, they've got to take care of guys like Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr and Stephon Diggs coming up. So they have a slew of other players that they have to worry about, in addition to the veterans that they've re-signed, like Linval Joseph, and, you know, still so young to get that second, you know, that third contract, essentially.
Yep.
And then also, who am I forgetting here?
Daniel Rose, Hunter.
Joseph.
The pass rusher,
and
Hunter.
Yeah, Daniel Hunter.
Yep.
Absolutely. So, I mean, they've got this core of young talent, but, oh, by the way, they've got this really unique situation with the quarterbacks. And, you know, the feeling I got, this is nothing Rick specifically said, but the feeling I got is that despite all the sort of positive vibes about Teddy Bridgewater's health and he might be able to contribute at some point and all that, I think there's a really good chance he remains on PUP past the 6 week, and thus his contract would toll and he essentially would make the same thing he made this year in 2018. And it could be, the possibility exists that the union gets involved and gripes about this and argues about whether, you know, he could pass a physical, whether he is healthy and medically okay to help. So that's going to be something, that's something I think the Vikings have geared up for, you know, from the moment they had to make a decision on the fifth year option with him. So yeah, it's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. The Vikings have some real tough decisions because Sam Bradford obviously is a free agent after this year too. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think it would make sense for them to draft a quarterback next year, or, you know, if they decide to let Bradford go, if he's not going to be the difference maker, I don't think you can count on Bridgewater even, you know, I mean, you never know. He may not come back to full form. So they've got, you know, and this could also be an off season where more veteran quarterbacks are available than we've ever seen. So that also is a possibility for an outside the box thinking as far as, you know, bringing somebody in.
Eric, we don't have enough spats right now between the Players Association and the league, so that's just what we need is something on the Bridgewater front and some contract disagreements. I did want to just say on Sam Bradford real quick, well, I want to get your thoughts. I'll throw mine out there first. I thought his season last year was criminally underrated. I really did. What he overcame, not only showing up 10 days before the season, but you know, 5-6 different starting tackles and absolutely no run game. He still puts up a career year. If Spielman's moves pan out, the big moves this offseason, be it Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers on the flanks or bringing in Dalvin Cook, is Bradford set up to really shine in a contract year, or do you think maybe he's already reached his ceiling?
Yeah, and they drafted Pat Elflein too, and you know, he's some who could end up being a week one starter at center, and they really like what they've seen from him. So that's another subtle boost to the help up front. And right, I mean, you know, in a perfect world, Dalvin Cook can rip off big plays. You know, Laquon Treadwell can give you something after a complete washout of a rookie year. You know, the tight end position can continue to be a strength. I mean, I really thought Rudolph and Bradford worked pretty well together, especially in the red zone last year. And so, yeah, and you know, Bradford became an easy mark because he did take so many sacks. There may have been a handful that he could have gotten rid of the ball or something, but, you know, this is a guy with multiple ACL injuries and you know, he's been beaten up in his career. I don't think he's thinking, I'm going to be the tough guy. And try, you know, there was just so much pressure in his face. And stepping in, like you said, the way he did, not much lag time to figure this offense out. He did it on the fly. Great job by the coaching staff to work that in as best they could. They had an offensive coordinator switch, too. I mean, it was,
right. One thing after the next.
Insane.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it just, look, I didn't think he was exceptional. But you don't set an NFL record for a completion percentage and not do some things right given all the, you know, the limitations they had.
Yeah, I guess in sort of a circuitous way, what I'm getting at is I think we should not be sleeping on the Vikings this year. I agree. They're only 2 years removed from overtaking the Packers, and they really have made a lot of improvements. Last one on the Vikings, and then we'll move on. I didn't even do our administrative stuff at the top. I got to tell our listeners, if they haven't already, please head to iTunes and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We would love it if you left us a rating and a review while you're over there. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode. Eric, last one on the Vikings. I know you did a lot of draft work before you came back to Pro Football Weekly this past spring. What'd you think of the other LSU pass rusher who joins his teammate now, Danielle Hunter? Is it Tyshawn Bowser? What kind of sort of review did you have of him, and how did he slip into the undrafted ranks and now maybe looks like the next great pass? Well, that's a stretch, but could potentially be the next formidable pass rusher in this Vikings pipeline.
Yeah, he was an interesting player coming out. I mean, he I think athletically people were a little bit underwhelmed.
Okay.
And he was so lean. His body was, I mean, when he came into the combine, he had a really low body fat percentage. I know there were some people saying that, it, you know, functionally speaking, is he going to be able to hold up against the run? You know, he didn't have great athletic testing numbers. He didn't have exceptional, you know, I mean, he was a pretty tall kid, but he didn't have exceptional arm length or hand size or any of that stuff. And you know, I think even just looking back at his numbers, and like Hunter, I mean, Hunter didn't have great sack numbers in college. He was kind of an exception to the rule of a, you know, of a guy who didn't sack the quarterback in college on a high rate, but ends up doing so in the NFL. That's very rare. But you know, there was some stiffness, I think, in his game, and it was just kind of a, you know, I think everybody got excited about the bowl game and thought, oh wow, you know, he destroyed Lamar Jackson. He was so good in that game. Maybe he's kind of, well, people look back at the entire season and saw a player who was just sort of ordinary a lot of the time. But maybe that bowl game was a little bit more of a indication that he has some untapped potential. So that's an interesting player for sure. And they've had some luck finding those kind of guys.
Yeah, no kidding. He's looked good in the preseason. He says he's really comfortable hooking back up with Hunter. And there's no doubt that Mike Zimmer and that defensive staff, they look for traits. They want the long dudes with the very similar defensive end size, 6'5", and somewhere between 250, 270 thereabouts, with long arms and in moldable traits. And I think Bowser fits that category as well. Eric, one more piece of kind of bookkeeping real quick. I got to tell our listeners about Loot Crate. Be the envy of your friends and get 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W, and enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. Loot Crate is pretty cool. It's the best surprise you know is coming. Their theme for August is Kingdom. That means you're going to have an opportunity to get swag from franchises including The Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, and Lord of the Rings. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. Basically, you go out to your mailbox, you know that you're getting a box from Loot Crate, but you don't know what's going to be in it. There's going to be a franchise t-shirt, all kinds of other monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics in your favorite franchises. They've got a way to geek out your pets with Loot Pets. You can go bigger with Loot Crate DX. It's pretty cool, guys. Again, the best surprise you know is coming. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W, and enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. So thank you again to Loot Crate, and thank you for humoring me, Eric, while I got that read off real quick. Let's get back to some football discussion. Sure. And let's just stay in the NFC North for a minute. There was big news out of Chicago this week with John Fox telling us that Mitch Trubisky took first string practice reps Wednesday and will start the second half with the first team. The Bears staff hopeful that he'll see the Titans first team out there still after halftime. What's your read on this situation? It would appear that Glennon's grip on this starting job, maybe it was tight to begin the camp, but it seems like it's loosening.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see how it all plays out. And I mean, obviously Trubisky wasn't as brilliant in the second preseason game as he was in the first, but you know, Glennon was only marginally better. I mean, that red right. zone interception, and you know, he needed that scoring drive at the end of the half. He had to have it. I mean, if they didn't convert there, all of a sudden we'd be having a whole different conversation. It seems crazy to talk about one or two drives in a preseason game, but these things matter, and it's perception. And you know, if the guys on the field don't believe, then who else can buy into this thing? So yeah, I think obviously it's been a combination of things where, you know, it's maybe not been as rapid an ascent as DeShone Kizer in Cleveland, but there's been a feeling that Trubisky is catching up and starting to get some things. And then, you know, you want to give him a shot at least, you know, because this may be the last time you see him for a month or two or however long.
Right.
But it may also be, like you said, an opportunity to kind of win a job here. So what a weird deal it would be after the Bears were so definitive about Glennon being their starter, to now kind of back off and realize maybe we made a mistake here, and either misevaluating Trubisky and saying, you know, we don't think he's there yet, or over-evaluating and misevaluating Glennon and saying that he can hold the job. So
right.
I don't know. What are your thoughts? It's been so strange a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, a few things there. I'm tough on John Fox. A lot of it he deserves, but I do want to quickly give him credit for a point you just made correctly. Not every coach marches the starter back out for that 2-minute drive at the end of the first half, but they knew Glennon needed some confidence after another tough go, and it was that final, I believe the final drive in the half, that he did finally find some success. So credit Fox for that. I will say, though, our general manager, Hub Arkish, yes, he's also my dad, asked Fox 2 weeks ago whether it was important, whether it was both the plan and whether it was important to see Trubisky get opportunities with the ones and against the ones. After his breakout performance against the Broncos, John Fox said, "No, I don't think so." Less than 2 weeks later, that has changed. So he's been walking things back. I don't think there's any two ways about it. I mean, he was on the record as saying that. So, you know, the other part of it is maybe potentially the Bears put a little bit too much stock in NFL starting experience. I believe Glennon had 18 starts, but they were, what, two and a half years ago. So it's kind of funny.
Right.
No, Trubisky doesn't have as much experience overall, and it isn't as high of a level. But theoretically, he's got less rust to knock off, you could argue, than Glennon, who's been idle watching Jameis Winston for 2 years.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, right, it was that half year with Lovey when he got pushed, you know, out of the starting job. And then, right, the last, you know, two seasons overall watching Jameis Winston play, yep, and being relegated to second team status with the Bucks. And so, yeah, I mean, it's hard for a guy to go, you know, that long a gap. I mean, I'm trying to think of guys that I've seen do it. I mean, John Beck, I don't think qualifies as a good example of that, but I think he went 4 years between starts or something like that. But yeah, I mean, you just don't get it back all of a sudden. And you know, the things that impressed me about Glennon back in the day when he was a rookie starter thrown into a bad situation, I haven't, you know, the kind of the poise and the quiet confidence, I don't think that I've been overwhelmed by those qualities so far. So I don't know if he's lost it or if he just hasn't felt the opportunity to gain it, but you can hear from his comments he's feeling a little bit of pressure too.
Yeah, I mean, he said the words deja vu, so he's been down this road before, right. And he also said, you know, his thoughts haven't changed on this being a quarterback battle per se. He was told it was going to be one set of reps for Trubisky. You know, he's kind of going on the defensive, and I don't necessarily blame him. The last thing I'll say on the Bears real quick, Eric, and we'll move on. The two things that have stood out to me for Glennon, not in a good way, A, is his inability to find any receivers. He's not getting anything done more than 2 or 3 yards past the line of scrimmage so far. Maybe that's by design and Dow Loggins wanting to ease him into things, but that jumps out. And again, maybe that's in part because of the Bears receivers, which I don't think are very good at all. The other thing, though, is it just looks like everything's happening really slowly. And if the Falcons, that's Chicago's week one opponent, if they don't have the fastest defense in football, they have to be one of the 2, 3, 4 fastest. And I wonder if that's maybe in the back of the Bears' heads. Man, Glennon looks so slow, and these guys are going to be coming in here flying around. But a lot to be figured out in the next couple weeks. I'm not predicting that Trubisky is going to be starting in week one or anything like that. It's just been an interesting development that's occurred this week. So we'll be watching that closely. Obviously, check it out at ProFootballWeekly.com. It's Arthur Arkush and Eric Edholm chatting with you on the Pro Football Weekly podcast about halfway through here. And we're moving on to Odell Beckham Jr., Eric. That was a frightening injury from, what is it, Body Calhoun? Who's that Nickel Browns corner? His name's escaping me, but it was pronunciation.
Calhoun, yeah.
There you go. It was OBJ versus BBC. And the Giants have to be grateful, at least from what we're hearing them tell us, is that the injury isn't considered serious. But just your thoughts watching that play happen, and is there any way to not kind of view it as a reminder of just how dangerous the preseason is?
Oh, sure, yeah. And I mean, obviously we've seen a rise, I think, in non-contact injuries that can happen in flukish ways in a training camp practice.
Absolutely.
I mean, some of it's just unavoidable, you know. Yeah. I've had a lot of people call me on radio shows, when are we going to cancel the preseason? Probably never, you know. I mean, this is, look, the coaches know the risks. They play their starters as much as they feel they need to, right? I mean, you know, Randy Moss did not play a snap of the preseason in the 2007, you know, when he joined the Patriots, and went out and had a pretty decent year from what I remember. So I'm not saying he was okay. But I mean, like, you know, does Beckham need a bunch of snaps? Probably not. They wanted to get him some work. They got him some work. It was a fluky deal. I mean, I don't think it was not a dirty hit, at least not by NFL rules. I get why receivers, you know, there's a darned if you do, darned if you don't kind of quality. If you hit him high, you get fined or suspended. If you hit him low, you potentially could knock out a guy for the season. It's tough. I get it. But, you know, here's a guy scrapping for a roster spot, trying to make a team, and he's got Odell Beckham, maybe the, you know, one of the best 2 or 3 receivers in the league, if not the best. And he's got one play. He's already kind of stumbling to the ground. He's got to go low. So we'll see. I mean, is this going to be the kind of injury that keeps him out week one, week two? I don't know. Could he play in that first game? Do the Giants want him playing? Those are questions. Maybe they feel like they can go into that game and get lucky. It's a team they've had some success against, and no Zeke Elliott right now. So it's possible they play it very carefully. But yeah, it's obviously a little bit of a concern, but it could have been a lot worse.
Eric, I'm not saying anyone's right or anyone's wrong, but it is also interesting that the two sort of, and there's more than two, but the ones we think of first, the transcendent talents from that 2014 draft, OBJ and Aaron Donald, Where's Aaron Donald right now, and what just happened to Odell Beckham Jr.? So scary stuff. The Giants said the x-rays are negative on his ankle, but they haven't said that he'll be out there for sure week one. As Eric just mentioned, that, of course, is Sunday night versus the Cowboys. And as we sit here today, Ezekiel Elliott won't be out there. That could be two of the NFL's biggest faces of the league not playing in primetime. That would be a something. I wasn't planning on it, but I do want to just stick with this very quickly, because the other side of that game, that Browns-Giants game, and I guess we'll talk about DeShone Kizer too in a minute, but what about Greg Williams' defense? I didn't think it was a dirty hit either, but a couple series earlier, and there's nothing wrong with this, it's just an intimidation factor. Jabril Peppers ranging from the middle of the field to the sideline. Brandon Marshall has a chance to stretch out and go get a deep ball on a nine route from Eli Manning, and he made a business decision. And I'm thinking, is this another Greg Williams defense that's starting to get a little bit of intimidation factor with a lot of talent and a lot of speed out there? Maybe they're gonna sneak up on some folks this year.
Yeah, maybe cut it loose a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you almost feel like this Greg Williams experiment is going to be either the best or the worst thing to happen to the Browns. I mean, on the one hand, you got nothing to lose, right? You've been a terrible team for a long time. You know, you just completed a one-win season. Everything, you know, there's only one direction to go, but they feel like they've been going in the same direction for a long time now. And so, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a situation where there's excitement, because you've got a lot of athletes out there and a lot of players who could end up being very, very good. But it may be a little bit of chaos at first. You know, I mean, you may have Myles Garrett overrunning plays. You may have Peppers not knowing exactly where to go. You may have, you know, some of these young defenders overshooting gaps and you know, trying to make plays that aren't there. They're going to give up some chunk plays. But I happen to think the Browns are going to be a lot more competitive than maybe people realize. So I'm kind of with you. I'm not predicting an 8-8 season, but I think they have a chance to really give some teams a little bit of trouble this season.
Yeah, that makes two of us. I told you a couple weeks ago in Indianapolis, I think 500 is probably a stretch, but again, they won one game last year, and I think they're going to have a chance to get potentially to 5, 6, 7, 8. When you're making those types of improvements year to year, that really is an achievement. Of course, you can't even start to predict it without knowing what's going to happen behind center. The Browns did take a step in the direction of getting DeShone Kizer out there week one. He will start this weekend in the all-important third preseason game. Eric, you wrote on this yesterday, just your quick thoughts on DeShone Kizer and whether you think Cleveland is making the right move if he turns out to be the guy week one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, most rookie quarterbacks don't turn into Dak Prescott, and the Browns do not have the supporting cast that the Cowboys did last year. It reminds me a little bit of what the Eagles had to do last year. Now, the Eagles may have had a better defense or whatever. I know we just talked up Greg Williams a little bit, right, and all the talent they have. But, you know, it reminds me a little of what the Eagles had to do last season, which was take a kid who missed half his senior season at North Dakota State and throw him in there because he had some poise. You know, he had some command, talking about Carson Wentz.
Yep.
And could end up just sort of riding through the wave of struggles and ups and downs and things like that. I mean, Kizer could come out and play very well early and then take that step back, which is what Wentz did, you know. And
right,
the Detroit game was a good learning, you know, was a good lesson for Wentz. And it was a good reminder that, you know, it doesn't come easy. There's going to be times like that. So for as much poise as Wentz showed early on, some of that was undone with some careless throws. You could tell he went through his spells, you know, where he lost confidence in some of his receivers and he tried his best, but there was only so much he could do. I kind of feel like if they go with Kizer, that's the plan, and everything seems to be indicating that. You know, they're willing to live with some of those ups and downs. I mean, Kizer went through a very difficult season last year and had – there were some communication issues on the staff, and there were some things that – well, he lost a ton of talent too. And he held back on throwing some people under the bus a little bit. I feel like he handled it pretty well. So, I don't know. Others feel differently. Other people thought like he wasn't the leader that Notre Dame needed last year, but – you know, this is going to be a fascinating experiment, and if it works out, you get your potential franchise quarterback at pick number 52 and take three guys ahead of him. That's great, and they've got a slew of picks coming up too. So that right, this could be a franchise-altering move right here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you said all the 2018 draft capital. That is why the Browns are wise to be pushing Kizer out here early. They need to know if he has a chance. And maybe they have that position solved after decades of being in complete flux. And maybe it's not the worst thing if they have to see him go through some up and downs, because that's when you get to see how he responds. So excited to watch DeShone Kizer this weekend and see what he's able to do with his opportunity. And an interesting comparison with Carson Wentz, because it's funny, watching Kizer last week, Wentz popped into my mind because I covered that Bears-Eagles game in week two on Monday night at Soldier Field when Wentz took a couple unbelievable shots where he decided not to go out of bounds on the move, and Kizer took one of those last week too, and for whatever reason Wentz flashed into my mind. It kind of reminded me this is one of the things we'll have to figure out is when I gotta live to fight another down, so and to make it through the rest of the game. But just kind of a random connection I drew there. So chatting with Eric Edholm, I'm Arthur Arkush. We got a few minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Let's talk more quarterbacks. We're a few days removed from it now, but I'll just tee it up to you this way, Eric. Did the Broncos make the right move going with Trevor Siemian over Paxton Lynch, and what's next for both of those guys?
Yeah, the first part of the question, I'm going to say yes, and I think it was obvious to anybody who was, I wasn't at, the training camp practices, right, but the reports were, you and I read them, we all talked to the same people who said, look, he kept him at arm's distance the whole time. The whole offseason, Trevor Siemian was at least one step ahead of Lynch, and they kept waiting, they kept giving Lynch the opportunity. Hey, it's your ball. You can go get it. He failed to do that. There were times when the pocket broke down and he would break off his first read and just not look confident out there. It didn't look like he was going through progressions and fully grasping the offense that they've laid out for him. Now, it's a different scheme than he learned as a rookie.
Right.
Totally different one from the one he had at Memphis. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. He was playing in a very crude high school offense, and he just doesn't have a lot of football in his background. I mean, that's one big issue, is that, Trevor Siemian has only played the position, the same amount of time in terms of, how long he's been a pro, 1 year longer, I guess. But still, the idea that I think he's faced more bullets, he's a smart guy who can process things quickly. And now the question is, where do they go from here? And I think that's the more interesting one, because Lynch's career in Denver is not done. I heard people talking the last few days, oh, this is John Elway's biggest mistake and all that. It hasn't happened yet. We're not at that point yet. And it was funny. I'm surprised these comments didn't get a little more attention when I went back and listened to what Vance Joseph had to say. And I'm writing about it for, for ProFootballWeekly.com. Should go up some point on Thursday here. He basically said, now, if Lynch played this year, talking about week six or week seven, well, that's a different story. So he kind of opened the door. So even though he called it a permanent decision,
right,
it doesn't sound so permanent to me. I mean, there is an opportunity for Lynch to still start. And I think it also depends on if Siemian doesn't play pretty well, I mean, if he doesn't do okay the first five, six games of the year, guess what? They have a bye week in that week six, week seven range. And they could turn the ball over to Lynch. Not too many second-year quarterbacks taken that high, barring injuries, have not started at least 10 games the second year in the league. So, he would be in some pretty awful company if he didn't get some kind of experience this year. And I still feel like there's a chance to get the ball at some point.
It's interesting. The Broncos schedule early, not a lot of great defenses, but they do. They open with the Chargers, who are going to be better. They've got the Giants. That's actually not until after the bye. It's a week five bye, and then the Giants come to town week six. But some manageable defenses that I have some real concerns about, actually, whether you're talking about the Cowboys or the Raiders. I think that trip to Buffalo, the Bills will probably be better right away under Sean McDermott defensively. But who knows? That offense could be a disaster. We'll see. Do you think did Denver do enough around him? Do you think in the back of their minds John Elway's thinking, well, we won a Super Bowl with the ghost of Peyton Manning, and we still have this awesome defense in Manning? I mean, legendary, obviously, ability at the line of scrimmage to diagnose whatever. I mean, he's one of the best ever, but he wasn't even protecting the football until late in that Super Bowl season. He was really a disaster. So I hate to use the word, it's cliche, but the Broncos just want Siemian to manage the game, right, and hope that the offensive line and run game improvements can materialize, and it's going to keep them in a lot of games, more so that defense.
Yeah, and I think, right, they kind of felt like, hey, we'll get something out of the tight end position this year. He drafted a couple guys in recent seasons. We've still got to – receivers who've played at an all-pro level, and you know, Garrett Bowles will step right in at left tackle, and we've got more options at running back. C.J. Anderson, okay, he's looked like he's in better shape, and maybe Jamaal Charles can give us something. And but looking back, a lot of these were very provisional moves, and they weren't, you know, this is not like the Jaguars drafting Leonard Fournette at four, or you know, trading for Brandon Albert and drafting Cam Robinson. These are not the heavy investment kind of moves that I think they probably should have made or considered, at least. So, you know, there's a lot of guesswork here. I don't know if those guys can step up. Anderson, some people feel like could be primed for a decent year. I guess I'm a little bit, you know, kind of bearish on that. But yeah, I don't know. The whole situation is tough right now. There's some doom and gloom around this team, but there's also some people quietly saying, like you do, the formula still works. You know, we can win games scoring 17 or 24 points. We just have to score 17 or 24 points, and that's not always a given with this group.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of questions on the defense. I think one of the keys, Eric, is John Elway needs to get better immediate returns from his high offensive draft picks. He hasn't had them in a while. He needs Garrett, and it's a tough ask. I mean, left tackles last year was almost the exception, with a couple rookies going out there and having a lot of success. You know, Eric Decker, obviously, or Taylor Decker, the first that comes to mind. But they need Garrett Bowles to play well. They need Ronald Leary and Menelik Watson, however I pronounce it, to help kind of fortify that line a little bit, and maybe even Carlos Henderson can be that third option. Jake Butt, once he's healthy, they just need some of these guys to click, and I feel like Elway's recent drafts haven't on that side of the ball, so will certainly be worth monitoring.
And one more point.
Yes.
And just one more thing. I was talking to somebody from a different team who faces Denver this season, and I mean, they just threw it out there, and I hadn't thought about it. You know, Von Miller all of a sudden is kind of on an island. I mean, like, I know that defense is really, really good, but if you double team him, who's the alternate pass rusher right now? If it's not coming from, you know, Derek Wolfe, who's sort of a workman guy. Shane Ray is hurt. You know, Shaq Barrett's been hurt. I mean, all the other outside rush guys, you know, there is no DeMarcus Ware anymore. So they're really good on that side of the ball. They cover as well as almost anybody, but pass rush-wise, it may not be the same kind of sack production we're used to seeing early in the season until Ray and those guys get healthy.
Yeah, so true. I think that Shaq Barrett's a little bit ahead of schedule, but we have to remember, Shaq Barrett made a name for himself, 2 years ago now? He actually didn't really do much at all last season. I know they had good depth there, but DeMarcus Ware was down, and it was pretty much just Shane Ray that stepped up. We didn't hear much from Shaq Barrett, so a good point. And it sounds like, Eric, is Ray still, he's likely pupped to begin the season? Is that your... what you've been able to gather? I thought that was what I had read and heard.
Yeah, I think so. I have to double check on that, but I'm not 100%. I wouldn't. He's not being counted for the early part, and that very well could happen.
And one more rookie, I haven't heard much about DeMarcus Walker, but I believe a second rounder, a guy that they hope can kind of chip in there as well. So someone else in terms of young Broncos to keep an eye on for sure. We're going to close today, Eric, with what else? Let's talk about Colin Kaepernick for a minute. There was a rally outside the NFL headquarters on Wednesday, a peaceful rally of people that want to see Colin Kaepernick employed in the NFL. I don't know that that's going to have any bearing on his 2017 outlook. Maybe it's more so the Blake Bortles, Chad Henne disaster in Jacksonville that could. What do the Jaguars have to lose by kicking the tires on Colin Kaepernick?
I want to see, first of all, let's just start with the Jaguars. I want to see what happens with Bortles, because there were some whispers going around this week that they could entertain trades. And why not? Because, look, if you're going to do what I suggested, which is make him the number three quarterback, don't play him, don't allow that fifth-year $17 million deal to kick in for next year, because it's only guaranteed for injury. I mean, they could still walk away. You either do that, you put him on ice, if you don't think he can be your starter, and Chad Henne's starting the game Thursday, or you trade him, and if you think you can get something for him. And if you're not getting a quarterback back, then I think we start having that conversation all over again, whether it's Kaepernick or somebody else. I don't know. But I don't know. I haven't, you know, and when I've talked to the Jaguars or I've talked to other teams, like, you just don't sense a real openness right now to welcome Colin Kaepernick. You can read it however you want. I don't know how I've never gotten the sense that anybody really thinks he's a bad dude, or that he's a clubhouse cancer, or that he was going to be. I think it's more of this understanding that, if we have another option, let's explore it. I know it sounds crazy, because this is a quarterback who at times has played pretty well in this league, but I kind of not gotten the sense that that there are very many. Look at the Indianapolis Colts. We don't know how Luck's out. You know how long he's out for. We don't know. You know that. I guess there's enough teams out there who could use somebody else, like a Kaepernick, perhaps, and they're just not doing it. So my sense. Everyone asks me, when's this going to happen? When's he going to get a team? I don't know, and I don't think he very well could not play this season or be on a roster. So that's the best answer I can give right now.
Yeah, just a quick reminder. I don't think anyone needs it, but the Jaguars wanted to have Blake Bortles on ice as a rookie too, with Chad Henne as the plan to start. And how long did that last? Was it 2 or 3 weeks, Eric? It didn't last because Chad Henne, and I like him. He's a serviceable backup, but that's what he is, a serviceable backup. So that's not going to end well, I don't think, depending on what they're able to, if they can trade Bortles or whatever happens. But I don't think Henne is going to be the answer there. And then, you know, there's just no other guys like Colin Kaepernick. I think that's kind of the point here. I mean, what are you going to trade for for Brock Osweiler at his $16 million salary this season? I mean, that's insanity. And Cutler's now in Miami. Romo just had a kid and isn't coming out of retirement. So there's no one else out there. And there's other teams as well. I mean, I thought the Ravens, I continue to think the Ravens may make the most sense. And I think Joe Flacco is back on the field and the back is less of a concern, correct? I mean, that was a short-term thing, I believe. Is that the best the best of your understanding as well? But just the whole Harbaugh connection, it seemed like that would make sense.
Right, sure. I mean, just look at the Jaguars, the makeup of the team. I mean, right, they have some big play receivers, Allen Robinson. But, I mean, really, they're geared towards the run game. And you can't tell me Colin Kaepernick wouldn't have helped the run game out in the way his skill set should be used. Everyone says, oh, you got to redesign your whole offense. It's not that hard. Look, I'm my belief has always been that Colin Kaepernick is an average quarterback to above average quarterback, somewhere in that range. I think he's fine. You have to live with his limitations. You also can exploit his strengths. I'm not of the belief that he is this Super Bowl caliber starter we saw in 2011 and played pretty well the next year. He was in regression before last year. However, clearly better than some of these goofballs they're bringing in to sign in other places. You know, I think about the coaching staff. You know, and there may be some openness there. I mean, Scott Milanovich was a CFL coach. They have a wide-open style that I think could help there. And, you know, some other guys there who I think could actually be, you know, benefits to making this work. You know, Doug Marrone, I think, is an open-minded guy as far as play calling is concerned. You want to make, you know, Fournette, T.J. Yeldon, those guys running the football, Chris Ivory. Colin Kaepernick on the field helps. That makes it a little easier. You could run for 200 yards a game if you wanted to. So that would be the probably the easiest spot for him to fit in football-wise.
Yeah, I mean, you could bring different styles of runners kind of in waves, actually, and it might be the best way to maximize that defense and kind of just cover up some of the quarterback uncertainty. So I guess the best way to put it is stay tuned. That's what we've been saying for months on the Cap Watch, and that hasn't changed. So, Eric, on the way out, great stuff today. Does preseason number 3 get your juices flowing, and are there any games that we haven't hit on or teams that we haven't hit on that you're particularly interested to check out this week?
Yeah, I mean, obviously coaches sort of take different approaches to that third game than they used to. Some will definitely play the starters an extensive amount. Others decide not to and take sort of a different approach there. But yeah, I mean, I guess there's not a lot of intrigue with Jacksonville. We just sort of want to see, is Henne just going to be awful or can he be a decent enough option there? You know, I kind of look at the Jets and say, can they do anything offensively? They've got the quote-unquote away game against their rival Giants. You know, Cleveland, Tampa Bay, obviously two teams that are, you know, have some intrigue to them this year. I think that's going to be a good one. And then Oakland and Dallas matching up, that's more of a case of can some of these young defenders make their impact, because both teams' young secondaries really haven't contributed the way we expected to and haven't been available the way we hoped. So, you know, that's something to keep an eye on.
And we'll be back next week talking, getting geared up for the regular season, guys. It is finally upon us. We are super excited. Eric, thank you again. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
All right, buddy. Sounds good.
All right. That's Eric at Home. I'm Arthur Eckers. Thanks again on behalf of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast.